Hello.
Hello.
You're listening to Hacker Voice Radio on the 19th of March 2007. And it's the last show in Season 6. That's right, we are ending Season 6 on 2,243 episodes. It feels like 2,043 episodes, actually. We're joined here by a special guest, known by the name of Gary, or Solo. Gary's joining us for, I guess, a special kind of interview about the stuff that's happening on and in and around your life at the moment. You have said that you were willing to answer some questions from our community, and that's very kind of you. And let's see, so we've got a few questions. You don't have to answer them fully, of course, and because it might slightly get you in the shit.
Yeah, we certainly don't want you getting in any more trouble.
Not anyway.
Yeah.
So I just want to say, how have you been so far? I mean, how are you, basically?
Pretty low.
Yeah.
Really pissed off not being able to work.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that.
Some people would love that. Are you insane? I guess not being able to work and not getting paid is probably bad in itself. But maybe if you weren't able to work and you were getting paid at the same time, it'd be good.
Yeah.
But one
can wish. Firstly, it's the PC is a sort of savior of my mind, because you know, so I play a lot of games and stuff to keep myself on.
Well, I'm glad you're having fun. Good, legitimate fun.
So you're still allowed to have access to computers? They're not treating you like Kevin Mitnick, where you're not allowed to get gun near a touch tone telephone or something in case you blow the world up?
No, not at all. As long as it's not connected to the internet.
Right. Okay. So you're allowed to type away, but you're not allowed to dial up.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Cool. You could make your own cache servers and pretend you had your own mini internet.
Yeah, I tend to have human proxies these days. You know, people collect my email and stuff. So.
Yeah. So
it's always Bluetooth.
you could make some weird kind of obscure internet connection for yourself, couldn't you? With like infrared or dogs or cats or something.
Telepathic.
Telepathic, yeah.
Quite short range though, so you know.
Yeah. So I guess we'll start off with the first line of grueling questioning. We probably already had that, but this is a question from one of our listeners called Metatron. He says, did you try and hide your location while accessing the US government computers? And if so, what did you do to have in place to do that?
Yeah, that's perfectly fine to answer. I've commented on that elsewhere. So first, the usual techniques using various jump points and also clearing logs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the evidence that they have on you?
I'm not allowed to see this during an extradition hearing.
Right.
The new extradition proceedings don't require any evidence on the part of the requesting country, i.e. America.
Okay. So they're not telling you why they want to extradite you for?
Well, they're saying that, well, it's the unauthorized access. I apparently damaged every single computer I was on.
Like with a brick or a hammer?
Well, yeah, you know what I mean. But I found out that for it to be an extraditable offense, it has to be worth at least a year in prison. In both of the countries.
Okay.
And to be a year in prison in America, it has to be, what was it, $5,000 worth of damage? And
right.
Lo and behold, every machine I was on was apparently got damaged to the tune of $5,000. So, you know.
Right, okay. So that's just like something they just made up. They were sitting down there, ooh, let's see, he's gone into our networks.
Well,
I think,
yeah.
How much money did they have to spend on the so-called security consultants that went in there before you were doing what you were doing, and then now they have to spend twice as much?
Well, yeah, God knows. I mean, they're claiming, what is it? I've seen anything from $750,000 to $1.75 million.
Yeah.
claims of you know, the money it took to troll the machines and make sure there wasn't any malicious software or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of crazy numbers being bandied around over the months. There've been talks of 700,000, as you say, 750,000. Do they just make numbers up? Or,
I'm sure the media make numbers up, but I'm sure the DOD or the DOJ has actually got a paper bill somewhere.
Right. Okay. Interesting you say.
And I'm
that.
Sure the contractor that fulfilled the contract probably made it up as well.
Right, okay.
Well, yeah, of course.
So let's move on to his last question, which is, it was some time between the time that you were accused of the crime and the time that the police actually arrested you. Was there any data recovered from your computer, and he does an apostrophe or S, computers?
Yeah, they took all the boxes. Mm-hmm. Didn't just remove the hard drive, which was quite strange. They took the entire box. And then the main machine I was using, that hard drive, went to the Office of Naval Intelligence in Washington.
Okay.
And which is actually, and it was illegal for it not to be returned. It was sort of illegally in possession of foreign authorities. So obviously I had no chance of getting that back.
No.
But when they picked me up again in 2005, because the initial arrest was March 2002, they took the hard drive again, even though it wasn't connected to the internet. And I was quite surprised by that one. But I did actually, they sent me, when I asked for a copy of that back, or the hard drive back, they sent me a nice 160 gigabyte hard drive and a portable USB case. But they had a little laugh with me. They sent it back to me in the police forensic software format, called Encase.
So they sent you a blank hard disk without the, or did they send you your hard disk with the image on it of your old data?
No, they sent a brand new 160 giga, which I was well pleased with. With a backup in a police forensic software format, proprietary format.
That's fine.
Okay.
But luckily, a journalist gave me a copy of the police forensic software. That was fine.
Cool.
And with a license, I might add.
Which, what, sorry?
With a license, I might add.
Oh, right, okay. Right. So it wasn't a cracks.ru one, though.
Yeah, it's only done for software piracy as well,
He goes on to add as well, he wishes you... He wishes you the best of luck, and he thinks that the UK government is fucking you over.
Thank you.
And the another set of questions that has been asked, and these, may I add, are there only two people that were actually bothered to email us in? We do have more than two listeners, I assure you.
I've written a couple up as well.
Oh, cool. And as per usual, I've prepared nothing, because that's how I do it. This is from Demonix, another regular listener and guy from the forums.
What was the name, sorry?
Demonix.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was Mnemonix for a moment, which is David Litchfield, though.
No. How did you get interested in UFOs, and have you ever seen one?
I got interested in them when I saw one, which I suppose answers them both. It was the usual thing, a very distant light in the sky, but travelling in all sorts of directions, at all sorts of speed, and, changing directions very quickly and erratically. So obviously not a meteor or anything like that.
Sure.
And I joined before a British UFO Research Association when I was about 14, I think, maybe 12. My stepfather had seen some stuff. He lived up in Falkland near Bodybridge, which was a hotspot for a little while, some time ago. And then dropped it for a while, got older, found beer and stuff, and got back into it a while later when the internet was sort of first around in Britain, I think 95, and there was just so much stuff available on the subject on the internet. It was incredible. And you see all the rubbish and all the sort of fake footage and abduction stories that may or may not be true. And then you find things like the Disclosure Project, where you've got 400 military witnesses, radar controllers and the like. And it's just, it's damning evidence, because it's from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
These are guys that relied upon whether or not to launch nuclear missiles at Strategic Air Command. So it's very relied upon people.
Yeah.
And to me, word of mouth, our whole legal system works on witness testimony, and that's very powerful witness testimony. So for me, that was a good starter, a good convincer.
Sure. Could you elaborate more on the disclosure project? Is it anything in nature similar to the Project Blue Book from the 1960s and 70s, which is like the Blue Book was largely a disinformation project, wasn't it? Trying to debunk the whole UFO sort of conspiracy nutters, apparently, as the US intelligence whatever's believe. It's nothing similar in nature to that.
No, this is it's not government sponsored or anything. It's an independent project headed by a guy called Stephen Greer, who was sort of a county doctor for many, many years, and ended up working with the military quite a lot and got to the point where he was briefing CIA directors and the like. So they've been doing it for years now, I think about 20 years.
Cool.
And more on the UFO theme, these questions are actually mainly UFO themed. Do you believe UFOs are man-made or of alien origin? If of alien origin, do you believe that the world governments have alien technology that they are trying to reverse engineer?
Yeah, I believe that they are extraterrestrial in origin, and that they have been captured or crashed, and have been reverse engineered. But God knows how far. I mean, obviously, you can't get details and this sort of stuff.
Sure.
But there is, I mean, if you've done this sort of research, I have, and lots of other people I know have, and done lots more, and you see all the official stuff, it's so convincing. If it was in a court of law, it'd be guilty as charged.
Okay. And that kind of leads me on to the next question, which is rumors claim that you actually found proof of alien technology on your travels around the internet. Is it true to say that what you found is convincing enough that it wasn't just a fluke? And what you did see and read, could you tell us any further?
There's been some talk in terms of honeypot in connection with my story. And believe you me, the way you research a machine and a network and probe it and establish log-on and log-off patterns and work patterns before you actually go in, these weren't honeypots. And the machine where I discovered the picture was actually in Building 8 of Johnson Space Center, which is where a disclosure project witnessed, name of Donna Hare, who was a NASA photographic scientist who had secret clearance, said that in Building 8 of Johnson Space Center, they have a special subset where they airbrush out UFO images on a regular basis. And so then to find those files in Building 8 of Johnson Space Center is, that really...
pretty convincing. Okay, next set of questions that have come straight through from IRC, from PSG. Is appearing on a broadcast such as this the most sensible thing to do in the middle of a major case? Isn't there danger that you could damage your case?
No, I mean, I've done a lot of publicity in the past. I'm very open about everything. Not in my opinion. I mean, obviously, when one says damage, does that mean, could you turn people's opinions against you? Some people might think you're a complete idiot, other people might admire you or like you, whatever. But, what happens to me comes down to what happens in a court of law.
Sure.
And only if public opinion is very, very great against something would a judge perhaps take it into account. So I think they pride themselves in being very neutral and insulated from all that.
And his next question is, how good do you feel that your legal advice was during your process?
The legal advice was brilliant. I'm extremely happy with the legal advice. They're also great listeners as well as great advisors.
Okay. And what kind of lessons do you think people might learn from all your experiences?
System administrators should learn not to have blank passwords. And to install firewalls. And people that are interested in experimenting with computer security should just, if they can afford it, get two PCs or two machines of their own and hack one from the other. And people that are interested in UFOs should do legitimate research.
Okay. And PSG just wanted to add that he is from whitedust.net, and he's also a member of the Cult of the Dead Cow. Just a bit of
a member of?
Cult of the Dead Cow, CDC.
Okay, yeah.
He just wanted some self-promotion there, I think.
Yeah, they've been around for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, sorry, Darton H, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say that... Some might think that what you were doing was actually legitimate research, getting the evidence from the horse's mouth. But clearly the creators and investors think otherwise. I was going to ask. It seems like, well, you clearly attracted a lot of attention from the world's media. I mean, you've been referred to variously as, you know, the NASA hacker, mm-hmm. and you know, and your exploits have been described as the greatest military hack of all time, and various other grandiose titles.
Yes, second only to the love bug and all its variations.
I mean, you've been compared to...
Yeah, we don't want to talk about your bedroom life, you know.
I mean, yeah, you've been compared to, you know, the great, most notorious hackers since Kevin Mitnick and such and such. But Pentagon systems and White House systems, it seems that they've been cracked almost routinely, through the years. It seems that the White House systems and Pentagon systems have been cracked and broken into almost routinely, lots and lots of times over the years. Indeed, the Pentagon is claimed to get something like 250,000 attacks a year. So your exploits are hardly unique. Do you think largely you've attracted as much attention and sort of American muscle flexing as you have because of the timing of it? You know, your exploits kind of came to light in 2001.
2002 in March.
Yeah, not long after the events of 9/11. Do you think it was largely a massive overreaction on the part of the US to sort of say, you know, we're, you know, after 9/11, 2001, do you think they were smarting and they wanted to show the world that they're, you know, they're still the sort of elite of, you know, the world's elite, and they wanted to make a special case of you, special about your exploits in particular?
I think it was 6 months after 9/11, so obviously, you know, if you've been hit, then you're aware of being hit again. Then if you feel that someone's out to hit you, you will react badly. But I don't think I think the media's made more of the fact that it was 6 months after 9/11.
Right.
But obviously, yeah, I'm sure, you know, all the security services, including the cyber security services, would have been alert, definitely.
And Shaman from IRC asks, Gary, regarding the NASA UFO pictures that you saw pre and post editing, have you looked for the final publicity available, the final publicity image available at all? And do you know where and when it was taken?
Have I looked for the which image? Sorry.
I think he kind of grammatically phrased this wrong, but have you looked for the final image that was publicly available?
I didn't know. I'm not sure what he means, publicly available.
Like the one that... I think what he's trying to say is, if they were doctoring the images for a certain purpose, did they make any of these images publicly available?
Oh, I see. Sorry, yeah, because they're airbrushing now the high-res satellite images, which are then sell on to universities and stuff. No, that's good thinking. I mean, that was when I saw that, that's when I got caught. So I can go there again now to close it up pretty quickly.
Okay. And he also wants to say that he loves you.
He also wants to say what?
He loves you.
I love him too.
Bob Plonker, yeah, that's his name, from IRC wants to add, what did you think of the Throwies video?
I bloody loved it. I was so pleased when I saw that. I was smiling for hours afterwards. I was showing everyone. It was great. My friend put it on CD for me. Fantastic.
Excellent.
And thank you for that lot. It's really bloody wonderful.
It was a
really
pleasure.
Really cheered me up.
It was a pleasure. It was a drunken 2600 meeting, and we thought, fuck it, let's do it tonight.
Really admire that spirit. Yeah.
And he also goes on to say, did you think that you were going to get caught at some point? And did you reach a point where you didn't really care? Or do you think you just got a bit careless?
All three, really. I think I kind of had that classic thing of almost wanting to be caught as well. It was, you know, sort of fucking up for other areas of my life and stuff. So, very unhealthy sort of phase. So, yeah, and I did start to get careless. And yeah. I think subconsciously, sort of deliberately careless.
Yeah. Because why do you think that would be? I mean, I kind of know why that would be, because I've probably been in similar situations myself. But if you were in such a large pot of honey, you know, something so big and sweet to a hacker, you wanted to show it to other people, wouldn't you? And I guess that's where the carelessness comes in, because you can't handle that kind of big thing on your own, and that's where the ends start to go a bit frayed.
Oh, definitely. Also, because it became such a huge job for one person, you know, trawling hundreds, if not thousands, of machines and documents and stuff. An insurmountable task.
Yeah.
I guess it's also tempting to think that if you've been in the system for a long time, you're able to almost routinely dip in and out at will, then
you kind of feel like you're just wandering through to another room, you know?
Yeah, and it's very tempting to actually believe that you'll never get caught because you've not been caught so far.
Yeah, definitely, especially the security is so lax, you know? Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I think
you become lax yourself, you know, physician to heal myself.
I think the point has to be really made that you weren't the only person in there.
Crikey, not by any means.
And you didn't necessarily know the other people that were in the systems, but for a very, very good chance, there was probably going to be about four or five other people who were doing the same thing as you. It was just by some means that you were actually traced back. And I guess my question is, what would you have done? Let's say you were going to do it all again now, which is probably never going to happen again. It's the last thing you want to do.
What UFO research?
Yeah, I mean, would you use your neighbour's Wi-Fi connection, or would you? No, this is where I'm getting at. Would you go to Starbucks and try it from there instead of doing it from like your home?
I wouldn't do it all again.
No, but hypothetically. Sorry. Hypothetically.
Theoretically. I'm not even going to think about it, mate. Sorry.
Okay.
it's been such an awful chain of events in my life.
Yeah.
And it's such. I'm actually, you know, I do. I'm very good at putting a face on things, but it's done me a lot of psychological damage as well.
Yeah.
And relationship damage, and so it's, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of get ill when I look at people on the internet and walk past internet cafes and get a strange shudder.
Really.
Yeah. I thought I'd miss it at first, but you know, it's kind of.
I guess it's going to be. If you have some sort of trauma in your life, the thing that caused the trauma would have been the computer. Every time you see one, you know, it would scare the living daylights out of you, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm glad that didn't happen. Otherwise, I wouldn't be playing X3 Reunion for like 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Amazing game. It's kept me sane.
So it's not that bad then?
No.
Good.
Can't quite get off the base box.
Yeah.
So I'm just reading through some news. At one point, you have a remote control connection to a terminal, and yeah. You're downloading your photographs of your non-human craft, and. You say you misjudged the time difference between here and the US, and you actually logged onto a terminal that someone else was using, and they spotted that you were in with them and cut you off.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind then? Did you think, oh, this is it now, I'm done? Or,
Well, I knew I'd been caught because they took control of the mouse.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they right-click on the LAN icon and disconnected. It was horrible because it was just after, well, it was during downloading the first picture I'd found where Donna Hare said it would be, you know, in folders that were called raw and processed or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was a real weird moment, you know, complete elation and then a complete, completely horrified.
So what did your blood start running cold then and you the sweats come on? And
I think what he's trying to say, did you poo your pants?
Yeah, straight to the bog.
Yeah.
I can't actually remember specifically what I did or how I behaved, but I was hugely disappointed. But I do remember, you know, obviously trying to get back in.
Mm. To try and kick that person off.
Say again?
To try and kick the person off their own computer.
But, they closed it down pretty quick. It was Windows port 139, 139 scan for a NetBIOS session and then testing the password.
Mm. Oh, well.
Okay. That's why it's so far. There's a one port scan that you could do, you know, 65,000 addresses.
Yeah.
In like 8 minutes, 9 minutes. On a 56K dial-up modem.
Yeah.
Wow. And really, there are that many computers in supposedly secure facilities that have basically no password or other... Yeah. Security on them whatsoever.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. I mean, like Simple Nomad, Nomad's Mobile Research Centre, mm-hmm. is saying that these things are all air gaps, you know, kind of casting aspersions on me even having been where they've been, but obviously for Yanks, they've been there, of course they've been there. And there's millions of systems on air gaps that are definitely sensitive, if not classified. It even gets as heavy as you get machines that aren't on the SIPANET, the secret internet protocol router network, but they prepare mm-hmm. documentation for the SIPANET and they're connected to the internet.
So
I wouldn't even be surprised if somewhere there's some external access to the SIPANET. It's just it's mind-boggling for someone that's meant to be the world police and
yeah.
be very sophisticated. I mean, if Al-Qaeda were doing stuff in there or whoever, I'm sure
it's very scary.
It doesn't inspire to sleep well at night, does it, really?
We're pretty frightened. And I guess that's kind of why they wanted to kind of make an example of you, in a way.
Yeah, because the systems were considered to be important. So.
Yeah.
And also, I did leave cheeky messages everywhere. I sort your security out and political sort of dialogue monologue.
Yeah.
Which was very immature. But,
that must have really ticked them off.
Yeah, a bit of activism, but, you know, not on a website.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So, I guess, because all hackers are humans at the end of the day, and just want to really ask you about, apart from what you do on the computer, what other kind of activities do you do in your social life and stuff like that? I mean, is it fair to say that you've had some experience with singing?
Yeah, like, well, not at the moment, because I'm, you know, just in such a weird mood all the time. But mm-hmm. I used to do a lot of sort of singing and songwriting stuff and mucking around with people on guitars and bongos. Read a lot, play computer games a lot, drink beer a lot.
So your average kind of life then?
Oh, yeah.
So,
good stuff.
Where do you see this whole thing... coming to an end? I mean, where do you see yourself in like 3 years' time, or can you even think that far ahead?
Hopefully talking to you from my home and not from a jail cell. I think it could still be a few more months, because if I lose this appeal, then I can appeal to the House of Lords.
Sure.
And then possibly to the European Court of Human Rights.
Yeah.
So it could go on for a while.
Mm.
And it's just, you know, it's very hard. It's something you don't want to have hopes for, because, you know, for obvious reasons. So you kind of put yourself on pause and try and put yourself on an emotional hold. Do typical bloke therapy, you know, just shut it all down there, wherever it is. And you know, try not to admit that you're terrified and upset and angry.
Yeah, I think all our thoughts are with you at this time, because I know that we, each and every one of us, would be fucking shitting balls at the moment. just to put it politely, because we're not on the BBC anymore, are we? But I think
that was funny on the BBC.
I could never imagine myself in that kind of position. I think it's very fucking likely that we've gotten away with some of the stuff that we've done publicly, might I add, and the stuff that you did. So I think it's a good refresher for anyone who is thinking about doing these kind of things that you did, and to either say, right, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to be stupid and you know, do it, or if you do want to do it and you're driven to do it, because we can't say to people, oh no, don't ever do it, because that's a bit stupid. You know,
oh, we're not the moment, Dad, are we?
Yeah, exactly. You know, wear a condom. If you're going to do it, wear a condom. That's what I'm going to say.
I'll steal Wi-Fi.
No, that's bad, Dark Nature.
Oh yeah, sorry. That's a naughty, naughty thing to do. We don't condone it.
No.
But we've heard it goes on.
But we might hypothetically actively do it.
we've heard that it goes on. We've heard that naughty boys do it sometimes. But
so have you heard anything about the new Computer Misuse Act that's been brewing in a review at all? Any kind of anything that you've heard about it? Any thoughts that you have about it?
The new Computer Misuse Act?
Yeah, because they're reviewing it. They're going to be adding.
Yeah, I read they had about 3 years ago. They had what do they call it? They invite a body of opinion in document form. Can't remember the correct term, but it was from people like the Metropolitan Police and various banks and various university professors and stuff, and how it is, because 1990 wasn't it, the original?
It was very, very early on. Yeah, something like 1986 or something like that. Yeah, because
a complete update. It needs to have specific offences like DDoS attacks and spam and virals and whatever. There's so many forms of intrusion and malware now that it has to be much more discreetly specified.
Sure.
I mean, the Computer Misuse Act has been updated a couple of times since its original inception. As I see it, the largest problem with it is that it's mostly put together by politicians and people that probably don't often use computers. So you get lots of vagaries and no real relevance to the reality of of things. So, for example, you end up with an act that effectively bans most of your network administration tools, because on the one hand, you can use them for running your network, and on the other hand, they could be used for malicious purposes. So for example, you can use Nmap or Netcat to check your network system out for purely legitimate reasons, or you can use them for legitimate reasons, but because the politicians that write these rules up don't really know what they're on about.
Yeah, they think Nmap is a sushi bar, you know.
Yeah. So, You've apparently had written assurances from the US that that you won't be facing a military trial, and as such, there's no chance that you'll end up in Guantanamo. But I've read that this is an unsigned contract. So, as such, I mean, is it worth the paper it's written on?
No, especially since no one's signed it, you know.
No, no.
And the only person that can make those kind of decisions is the president. When I first heard the Guantanamo thing, I thought, oh, yeah, right. But then someone said to me, well, I'll look at it this way, you know, most, if not all, of the people in there, poor buggers, there's not even any evidence against them.
Yeah.
Yet I've allegedly directly attacked American military networks.
Yeah.
And that kind of made me look at it in a different way.
Yeah.
I think that's unlikely, but I think a military tribunal is likely. But I think there are facets within the government that would like, i.e. the opposition, that would like a big circus public show trial to show, you know, look how crap...
To string you up, basically.
...President Bush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think they just want to string you up?
I think there are factions, obviously, within governments, and I think some of them do. I think some of them do. I think some of them would rather have it. Well, be strung up, but be strung up quietly.
Yeah.
Hence, I think a military tribunal is more likely.
Sure. Yeah. Well, let's hope it doesn't get to that point.
I really hope not.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't you sort of half think that the UK government is completely sold you out by rolling like just rolling over and taking it up the arse from the United States? Do you think they could have stood the ground a bit more and said, well, no, he committed the crime over there, he's one of ours, we're keeping him, and we'll try him?
Yeah, definitely, that was quite interesting, actually. When I said to my solicitor, what does that mean to you, reading in between the lines, when the Crown Prosecution Service, the CPS, had this kind of case over on a plate to a foreign authority, and she said she spoke to someone high up in the CPS, and they said that it came from very high up, it came from way over their heads.
Mm.
Then you start thinking, oh no, I'm a bloody political pawn.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
The Americans obviously said, oh, we're not a pawn, but you know, just we have to have this guy or whatever.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So another question from Bob Plonker is, did you ever think of going on the run?
Oh crikey, no way.
No.
Loads of people said that to me as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, life as a fugitive, no name, or how would you work? How would you earn money? You know?
Yeah, no, I was thinking about that as well from your point of view, and it would just not only would it cause you a hell of a lot more problems, legal side, but also your life would be even more ruined than it already is.
Yeah.
So what's the point? You might as well just face up to what's going to happen to you, and sleep in the same bed.
Yeah, I'd rather be picking up the soap in Virginia.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard Guantanamo is quite nice this time of year. you got a joke about it, eh?
Future's orange.
Yeah.
So, do you... I don't know if you... Well, I've heard rumours that you used to socialise within the UK hacking community, such as 2600 meetings and stuff like that. Do you ever intend on doing that again while you're still on parole or whatever, or do you want to do it once everything's gone and dusted and over with, or do you not want to do it ever again and never be...
Well, you were kind of breaking up then. Did you ask if I used to socialise with the UK hacking community?
Yeah, and I also said, did you ever... once this is done and everything's finished with, do you want to go back to socialising, or do you never want to be associated with hackers again?
Right. I didn't while I was actually hacking, hence the name Solo.
Yeah.
And you do see a lot of crap, a lot of twitching and bitching and arguments sort of on the scene.
Tell me about it.
And also, I know that all your listeners know and you yourselves know, but to make it clear for anyone that isn't quite so sure, just because people term themselves hackers, it doesn't mean they've been vandalistic or sending you all those adverts of Viagra that you get every day. a lot of us doing it for the intellectual challenges in the time, I think, Yeah, I would, because after being arrested and stuff, when I was allowed internet access in between 2002 and 2005, I think I was on alt.freak.uk.
Yeah.
And saw some very knowledgeable comments from someone who is now the chap that runs the Free Gay website. And met him, met London 2600, some really amazing, really clever people. I had a great time. Yeah, I would definitely continue to socialise when I'm in a better frame of mind, if this all goes my way or whatever, because it's not illegal, it's highly inventive and highly creative, and it shouldn't be stopped by the acts that are currently developing.
Definitely,
to stop security exploration, there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
I absolutely agree with you.
It's good for the industry, you know.
I thought you might say that. I think it'd be good for you and beneficial to still keep on, you know, socializing with other hackers.
Yeah.
And it's I guess the scene changes every year and so on, and different things come up, and the focus of interest goes a completely different way. And I guess being isolated from that, even though you do have human proxies that do the clicky clicky for you, I don't know, do you feel that you're getting withdrawal symptoms, or as you said earlier, you detest the internet now?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of joking.
Yeah,
but I don't get withdrawal symptoms. I did originally in 2002, just because I took my whole box.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, really, I think because it was new to me, but I'd only been on the internet for like 7 years at that point. I was, using it for UFO research and then the hacking. But there wasn't really much else I did with it.
Sure.
Apart from check email.
Yeah.
And play
surf porn.
Days, yeah, multiplayer game,
Yeah. Don't miss the
Unreal Tournament.
Yeah, well, I play Unreal Tournament too. So, we got something in common. I do have to say that.
I suck at computer games. Stay clear of them.
Sorry, say that again.
I suck so bad at computer games. I stay clear of them.
Yeah.
I just all the time.
It's funny that you say that, because I haven't played, apart from playing on the PlayStation, I haven't played computer games in a long time. I used to be really addicted to Ghost Recon. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Oh yeah.
I was just on there for about half a year. I was actually running a ladder for Ghost Recon, and it was like a 24-hour job within my current job. And so, it was like you didn't sleep, you didn't really go out. It was just like constantly playing and then updating stuff on the website, and I don't know. But I guess you kind of go through that period in your life where you get addicted to something, and then suddenly it just drops off and you never want to go back to it again. But for some reason, that doesn't happen with me with cigarettes.
I do have bouts like that with Splinter Cell.
Yeah.
Splinter Cell Double Agent at the moment. That is pretty badass, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend's got that on his Xbox.
Yeah.
So, Gary, what kind of stuff do you run at home? I mean, when you were hacking, and maybe many years before you even got in, hooked up with all this kind of UFO and not UFO, NASA hacking stuff. Did you mainly stick to like Windows operating systems? Were you a Linux, Unix kind of man? What kind of stuff do you run on your box?
I had Windows and Slackware Linux.
Okay. Cool. Just wanted to ask.
Yep.
Not going to start a flame war or anything, but...
I would have had a Macintosh if I could have afforded one.
Yeah. Excellent. So let's see.
Did you ever get to see the BBC Click interview that they did with you?
Yeah, my friend. I think someone put it on YouTube, wasn't it? You said me. But he wanted to download it onto the CD for me. You can't figure out how to capture the stream.
So
I'm sure
easy.
You must be able to.
Yeah.
No worries.
It's pretty easy. I'll email you some info.
Well, I'll pass it on to him. Obviously, if I was on there, I'd find a way. But
yeah, exactly. let's see if we've got any more questions from Irk. No, that's it, actually. Sorry, yes. The stuff that you were using to break into the networks, what kind of tools did you use? And did you write any of these yourself, or were they mainly readily available tools that...
Well, the graphical remote control tool was remotely anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the scanning and probing tools, I wrote a Perl script that used that just sort of bound together other people's tools. NTIS, NT Information Scanner, by David Litchfield. F-Scan by Soundstone Technologies. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things. I actually used Quick Basic to write a couple of things as well, to strip out certain things from different machines and IP addresses and get it all manageable.
Excellent. Yeah. So when did you get started with all this computer malarkey? Was it a point in your life where you remember as a child or as a teenager or something like that?
Yeah, I got an Atari 400 with a membrane keypad when I was about 14, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. And then an Atari 800, an Atari ST, and then an old 286 back in 94, 95.
Cool. So, what part of that life do you remember that you could say that was the start of the inquisitiveness, that urge to know a bit more than you're given on the screen?
Definitely, when I read the original banned edition of Hugo Cornwell's Hacker's Handbook.
Right.
But before that, sort of conceptually, when I used to program all the time, you know, all my mates were out and stuff, and I was just at home programming.
Sure.
And got mad on the assembly, and started off with BASIC, got into assembly. Mm. And that was the first little curiosity about, you know, the actual machine and how it works and having control over it. It's like some guys like cars.
Yeah.
I love them in the box.
That was your thrill.
Yeah. What it could do and how you could, you know, make it do what you wanted and visualize something and then get it on the screen or whatever.
Yeah.
Game coding, actually, very interesting. Artificial intelligence, genetic algorithms. Mm. And then combined with the passion to want to get across this free energy thing and try and find some hard evidence, because at the time I considered what I was doing to be in the general public interest. Combined with that and the actual thrill of learning to sort of get around things, and although there actually wasn't much getting around, and you're just scanning for blank passwords, but just putting the scripts together yourself.
Yeah,
just it's kind of creative, I suppose.
Mm, definitely is. Yeah, I think we have a lot in common when you say when you talked about your early parts of your life when you started computing. I mean, I started on the Amstrad, and with that, that was it. You had to code to do anything on it, apart from buying games and stuff, which you could. Yeah. But I didn't have enough pocket money to do that. So all I had was this book that was probably thicker than my fist, and you know, it's like sit there for hours and then trying to make a little cursor go across the screen in a funny way.
Yeah.
And that was it for me. And I think a lot of people that are listening to us now and maybe listen to us later and downloaded the show would tend to have the same background as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a very strong group consciousness with the people of our ilk. Mm. And you really see it when you read, you know, things like, say, there's many examples, from the Linux community or the Linux community. When you read documents, it could have been done by the same person, because the mindset, the humour, the little tangents people go off at, it's quite strange.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. It is just across the board. It is quite funny that way.
Yeah. A strong interest in sci-fi or fantasy RPG or...
Yeah.
I remember my first my first box was actually an Acorn Atom, and I mean that's all I could really afford when I was a kid. But when I got that, they already stopped making it for a good few years, and there was no games available for it apart from, you know, a couple of crappy old back catalog stuff. So if I wanted to do anything with it at all, it was a case of, as you say, just make it yourself. There's no other option, really. or spend hours and hours typing listings out of Acorn User Magazine.
Oh God, yeah.
Which invariably didn't work.
They didn't have they didn't have copy and paste in that day. So it was literally, you had to fucking type it yourself. I've got to say that we have about 5 minutes left.
I have a question from Bob Plonker.
Yeah.
He asks, are you glad that the Democrats in the US are actually gaining more power now? Because do you feel that they may be more lenient with you?
Well, I'm of the opinion that money controls the world and politics is a facade, naive. And I think there's very small social changes with various different governments. But if you look at long-term trends in legislation and business law and international law, no government undoes what the previous government has done, whether or not it was popular or not. So
that's
whether
it's true.
The Democrats or the Republicans, it doesn't really matter to me.
Mm. It's very true.
And a weird kind of question from Croat from IRC. He asked, was it true that you were high while you were hacking? I think by high he means on some sort of drugs or whatever, or pissed.
Oh, yeah. I was, a couple of cans of beer and a couple of spliffs at the time. Yeah.
Excellent.
Good stuff. Don't blame you.
Okay. Well, let's see what we can wrap up with. I guess thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have you on. It was a pleasure to do the little throw tags. I hope you're going to enjoy HVTV3 because there'll be a lot more of weird. We're going to be doing a lot of wireless cameras hacking. You know, the ones you get on the streets that monitor everything that's going on in the shops and stuff
excellent.
Like that.
So watching the watchers.
Exactly. So so we're watching the watchers and abusing the cameras in funny ways, optically, mind, not throwing, like, bricks at them. If the government's listening, because they probably
not
might.
Damaging property.
Yeah. I wish you all the best, as do everyone who's listening and everyone in IRC.
Yeah, I'm sure that all our thoughts are with you at this very difficult time. Yeah.
And hopefully,
it's been good talking to you both.
Yeah, and hopefully,
it's been nice to have an informal style interview.
Exactly.
And not have to wear a suit.
Yeah. I did warn you about that, though, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, and hopefully one day we'll get together for a few beers and.
In actual reality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Definitely. Over the interwebs. Yeah. So I'm gonna end the show with Elton John's Rocket Man, just because that was the only thing I could think of, because it kind of fitted with UFOs and stuff, and it's also a bloody decent song, and more so the fact that we're ending the season, and I like to bring out some of my music collection, so there we go. Yeah, exactly. So thanks for all the listeners over the years and all the people that stuck by us. We'll be off air for about 3 weeks. During that time, we'll be focusing on loads of sexy things in the background and vamping up the website and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully you can all catch us soon in 3 weeks' time. And hopefully Gary can listen to a few more episodes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So... I'll just say goodbye.
Thanks for the opportunity.
No worries at all. Yeah, anytime you want to talk again, just let me know, and we're more than happy to have you on the show again.
Okay, lovely.
More than happy indeed.
Thank you.
And this was another show from Hacker Voice Radio. If you have any comments or suggestions, please email us at radiohackervoice.co.uk. I've been Belial.
And I've been Dark Nature.
And I've been, what I used to be, solo.
Yes.
Solo.
So, Gary, you're not going to hear the ending music, so it's just going to go deadly quiet. So if you want to speak to us after the ending music, you can stay on the line, or if you want, you can just close your phone. And.
Yeah, I'll say I'm going to have a cup of tea, mate.
Excellent. All right, I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
so,
yeah.
Yourself, Gary.
Cheers, mate.
All right,
good
take
night.
Care now.
Speak soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Free flying. Zero hour, 9 a.m. I'm going.
Blaze.